Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comic Extension. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Nicole Lamb.
Hello. Hello. I have a wandering microphone.
Chris Casso.
Hello.
And, of course, Mr. Cole Hornaday.
Hello, friends.
How is everybody this fine evening?
Doing good.
Right. No, I was just going to keep doing that for, like, the next hour.
Yeah.
It was a wandering microphone. Hey!
Wandering.
Welcome back, everybody. It's been a while since we've seen each other.
Yes.
What has happened?
We've been in the same room. Well, technically, we were all in the same room a week ago for the Panel Jumper Live Chapter 7, which was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, that happened. The Panel Jumper Live Chapter 7.
Yes, it did happen.
How do we feel it went, Cole Hornaday?
Don't ask me. I'm the guy with imposter syndrome, remember?
Well, I've heard some feedback, and I've heard people say that they really enjoyed it.
Yeah. I am so proud that after nearly 4 years that all of us, at this table included, but other people in the creative community, keep coming together and putting so much creative energy into this show. And for those who have the benefit of actually being in production, because it could be you someday, you just hold on. I give this little speech. I try to give this little speech before we go on, and I do get a little verklempt, but I talk about how there's a lot of love in that room. Do not worry about, you know, being your best, because you will be lifted up by the presence of that supportive audience. And I still think that's true. I think
it's a great audience every time.
I think that,
and
I say crabby things about running 3 hours, but frankly, one of the reasons why we've had shows that have run 3 hours is that, you know, there have been times where the artists are feeding so successfully off the love they are getting from the audience that they keep working the laughs, or they keep working the moment. And also, you know, we have had very verbose guests, but I think that's because they feel at ease and they want to share what they're passionate about, what they're excited about, and that's why we have them
you
there.
You give them a very comfortable surroundings.
Yeah, I do feel like I barbed Kelly. I teased Kelly Froh a little bit too much about her pronunciation of things, but since we both had been in the Midwest, you know, I was in the Midwest for, you know, long enough to not ever want to go back. And anyway, so I'm sorry, Kelly.
And I don't think she's ever been back since she came here.
No, we had that conversation. It's like, we've done snow. Uh-huh. We don't care anymore.
That's right.
Yeah.
Just make sure to always end with some more Boylesque that has Pokemon evolutions.
Because I think that turned everybody into that audience into a big... big fan of
I want
that.
To do definitely more Boylesque. Having Denial on the show, I just lucked out. One of our supporters, Amy Lizert, sent me a note and said, I know this person who's doing Boylesque, and are you interested? I'm like, well, heck yeah.
And they did such a good job.
Denial was
such
superb.
A good performer.
I mean, I know nothing about Pokemon. So I didn't get
but
the subtext.
You learned a lot that night, didn't you?
But,
there was some evolution, though.
I thought it was a good performance. What are you getting at?
I thought that he was the fish from Mario, and then I was like, wait, is the crown that thing that makes like people sexy in the new game?
Oh, are you thinking that time I got reincarnated as a slime?
That too.
When you level up, you get sexy.
Just get sexy, So
just get sexy.
So I think there was a lot. I thought the show was superb, and there's a lot to be proud of, and I do frequently walk away from it going, I wish we could do it more often. Then I start looking at the legwork that is required. I'm like, no, we're doing fine. You're good. Yeah.
The fact that you get it done and it happens is a wondrous miracle
indeed.
And just such a labor of love. So
it's true. Yeah. Ben and I were talking about that the other day. It's like, you know, we have such a long lag time, and then we go through this intense period of, like, you know, 90 days of intense labor getting the web episode shot, getting the live show up on its feet, and
then
we collapse.
Yeah, the live show is actually the culmination of a lot of work, and so at the very end, it's just like we just collapse on the floor. You know, it's just arms akimbo, staring up the ceiling. Just
which is precisely what I did on Sunday. I don't remember getting off the couch. It's just, I wish I could actually plug myself into the wall so I could recharge more successfully.
And speaking of plugging, that episode of the panel. Panel Jumper was fantastic. Really great editing.
Thanks.
And so if you've not watched that yet, it's all about kaiju and monsters, and you should really check it out.
Yeah. You won't be able to check it out yet because I do want to make some more changes to the episode. I don't know if I... This was the first time you guys have seen the episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we shoot here at the Comics Dungeon at night, and we're adjacent to a very busy road, and the conceit is that there's a giant kaiju outside, but yet all the scenes facing the windows, you see just cars just casually driving by. So I'm doing my best to get rid of all that.
Are you really? Are you going to go through and erase all those cars?
Yeah. It's not that hard.
You could just have it where people don't pay attention because they live in Seattle and they're all sleepwalkers and they're just driving along until they run into a huge foot.
Or they're
just
so passive aggressive that they're like, you're going to have to get out of my way.
You can just add some screaming with every car that goes by.
Well, I was thinking there's one scene where, if we're just facing the windows, I can get rid of that pretty easily. But there's one scene where Ray is the scientist. He's at the door, and then he opens up the door, and he runs out, and the door closes, and the angle shifts, and then you actually see me in the reflection, which I didn't even notice.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
I didn't notice
good. That. And I'm going to get rid of that, too. And so that's a really complicated thing. I just might put, sirens in the background just to make,
so what you're saying is this is your James Cavill mustache episode.
What up? Henry Cavill,
sorry. Whoopsie. The Super Sash.
The super sash. Anyway, so the episode isn't online yet. Check out thepaneljumper.com soon. Like the Panel Jumper on Facebook. We'll let you know when it's live. And speaking of our supporters, we do have a bit of business because since we dropped an episode, we have to thank our Patreon supporters who helped with that episode. And one of the tiers is a verbal shout out on the episode of the Perfect Bound podcast when you for an episode that you supported. And so I just want to give a big thank you to Daniel Christensen, Jeff and Samara Alman, Jessamine Bateman-Yano, Lauren Dudley, Mark Brewster, Mike Gilson, Nicholas Reichar, Stephen McCandless, Webster Polk, that man right there.
That guy behind the camera.
And Dan Pronovo. And so Dan is our friend who
Dan's a recent convert.
Dan's a recent convert. He was at the show. He was actually one of two people on that list actually at the show. Oh, no, three. Nick was there, too.
Yeah.
No, Jeff and Samara were there. What Jeff am I saying? And so was Mike Gilson. Yeah, everybody was there.
They were all there in spirit.
They were all there in spirit. All right. So let's get on with the show, folks, now that we've done our business. What's new at the Comics Dungeon / Corner Comics these days?
We're mostly recovering from Snowmageddon and all the pain that caused because we missed 1 week's shipment that just never arrived, and then we had a second shipment arrive right on top of it. And then that whole week of the snow, we didn't get as much business as we would like, so we're just kind of recovering on that. And we're getting ready for Emerald City Comic Con, which is in...
Again?
It's in 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
2 to 3 weeks, yeah. So that's going to keep
us
busy.
It looks like I'm actually going to go this year.
Ooh.
Are you helping out with a booth or something?
No. Manager Mike has extra tickets that he's going to let me purchase from him. Nice. So I might actually go 2 days.
Okay.
Which is going to be, and I'm actually looking forward to it.
Hit up Artist Alley.
And I
that's the best
my
place.
And I'm going to go do things that I don't do, haven't done in the past because I'm worried about finding comic books. I'm not going to do that this time. I'm actually going to go to some panels and cool. I always bring comics. I always go through the guest list. And bring comics for people to sign because I do like doing that, but yeah, I'm actually looking forward to it.
Good.
So
do it.
I don't know what's happened to me.
I think Emerald City Comic Con, and if you guys have any inroads to
the imposter,
you should tell them this idea of mine. I noticed that last time when I was there, I was in costume because I was promoting this web series that I was in called The Rocketman, and I didn't have pockets. If I wanted to buy something, I had to carry it around with me.
Right.
So I promoted this idea on the show before, but I'm going to say it again. They should have a swag concierge at the Emerald City Comic Con. So you buy something, and when you go, you get a number, and that's your mailbox. And you buy something, you say, put this in number, 23A. And then when you leave, all your swag is waiting for you, 23A. You
it's
don't
a loot
have to carry
booth.
It around.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a loot crate.
No, it's a loot booth.
A loot booth. Whatever.
So it's clever. We should acknowledge
locker.
It. Thank you, Cole.
Keep going.
Do they?
Do they really?
Oh, see, the Home and Garden.
So it's adaptable.
Yes.
Home and Garden is more progressive than Emerald City Comic Con.
Yeah.
Not surprising.
Right. Anyway.
Those Home and Garden people are serious business.
Well, and they've been at it longer, too.
It's true. Know? That's yeah. true.
All right, so aside from getting ready for ECCC and recovering from Snowmageddon, anything else?
Do you have anything for Corner you want to plug?
I've got local and indie stuff there now from there Emerald go. Comic Distro.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. So I'm even more expanded on what I offer.
There are you still, right are you reaching a new base yet, or is it primarily the original clientele that are coming in?
You know, our base is kind of all over the place.
Is it?
And there is a lot of people moving to Kirkland, mm-hmm. I think because of the overflow of Seattle and the rent prices going up so high.
Yeah.
So I, at least a few times a week, I'm somebody who's like, I just found you, or I'm new to the neighborhood.
Great.
So, and I'm just getting a ton of people coming in with saying that. So
that's good to hear.
Yeah. And carrying a little bit of everything, I think, helps so that no matter who walks in the door, there's something for them.
Gives you range.
Exactly.
Yeah. The last thing I'll plug is we have been working through a consignment collection of over 30 short boxes of Silver Age Marvel. And if you follow us on Instagram, you will see many, many pictures that I take. And you will see a lot of these really cool old Silver Age Marvel comics.
Cool. I'm really glad you got the Instagram account because I'm looking at what you post like every day at work when I shouldn't be. But yeah, I'm like, yeah, good job, Chris. That's because that's a great way to reach people now.
I'm trying to get the butts in the store.
Yeah. Well, and so I know that, you know, this has been a challenge because you are social media challenged.
Yes.
You don't like those things. That
your cell phone
technology.
Challenge, not yeah. social media challenge yeah. per se.
Still. Yeah.
I'm social media angry is what I am.
Resentful, bitter,
yes,
yeah,
yes.
begrudging.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Begrudging.
Let's not pile on Chris too hard.
Yeah, I'm not. No, I think we're in agreement.
I agree with that.
I thought we were in a rap session
right
now. We're
copacetic here. Well, I did want to, I know you're ready to move on. But I want to ask one more question about how the snow impacted the store. Were customers relatively understanding, empathetic of the situation?
Yeah. Just and not as many showing up as I would like.
Yeah, well, we were all strapped.
Yeah, so. Exactly. We shut down early on two Mondays just because there was no business.
Mm-hmm.
Leanne couldn't come in because she's up in Shoreline, so, you know, she lost hours. That's not great for anybody.
No.
But yeah, it's mostly just, it just displaced the patterns of people.
Yeah.
And this is already a inconsistent industry, so that doesn't help.
Got it.
You know, we're working on it.
Mm-hmm. As long as no more Snowmageddons happen.
No more.
Yeah, because I even had a delay because there was like road closures. We both had like another delay on top of it because peripheral places were shut down.
Right.
And I will tell you, one of my most hated things is dealing with a new shipment on the day that everybody considers to be new comic book day, because humans are not patient or understanding. So I like to eliminate that from happening.
Yeah. There's a lot of behind the scenes work that is just not known, you know? And
of course.
It's a much attributed to the comic goblins that just
it really is. It's the goblins in the night or the gnomes in the night, depending on how you see it. Probably goblins.
Goblins.
They used to repair shoes and now they put out comic books.
I just assumed, like, you know, the UPS delivered your box of comics. You open it up, leave that night, and you come in the next day, they're magically all on the shelf.
We drop a little bit of water inside and it just say, boom.
Depends, like, do you have good fairies or bad fairies?
Right.
Because, you know, if you just open the box, then they'll probably just, like Sleeping Beauty fairy their way onto the shelves.
But isn't that why you leave out, you know, a saucer of milk and cookies?
Yeah, exactly. You got to appease them.
A saucer of whiskey and...
Yeah, for goblins.
Nachos. Yeah, for goblins.
Whiskey and nachos.
Nachos.
That's how the comics world goes around. Hey, friends, Emil Ferris, author of My Favorite Thing is Monsters, needs to add an addition onto her house for all the awards that she's winning for that book. It won the Fauve d'Or, which is it's the golden, what does it stand for? The golden something, golden prize. Mm-hmm. That's what that stands for. And just recently, and is this book still flying off the shelves? I know that the last time, or the first time I asked about it, you didn't have any in stock.
So it's a little slower now because this is the thing that's always surprising to me. She keeps winning awards, and I felt like
it came out 2 years ago.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. so it's like, how are you winning the award again for the same thing?
I think people keep discovering it. I discovered it late.
But I don't know if that's how this award ceremony works. I don't think you have to make room for all the new books coming out. But she does deserve it. But it's still just, it throws me off. I'm just like, wait, when? I don't understand time anyway on the best of days. Did this not come out in 2016 or did it come out 3 days ago?
And what astounds me is that this is part of a series of stories. Yeah. So, like,
she's got the second one on the way.
Yeah, there's a second one someday.
And I don't want to rush her.
No. Nope.
Well, sure, yeah.
Because the quality of this one was, it clearly felt like, my favorite thing is Monsters, clearly felt like an extended labor of love that mm-hmm. she took her time with creating, producing, developing, which is one of the reasons why it's so beautiful and so unique.
And she had to retrain herself how to draw, too.
Right. So, And I'm wondering, and I don't want her to rush what she's doing or feel pressured because of all this fame that she's gotten. I would be perfectly happy if we don't see the sequel for another couple of years, actually.
This way she could get 10 more awards before then.
This is true,
yeah.
I just don't
film adaptation
to...
and...
Just like with video games where they announce something and then you don't see it for like 4 years and you forget that it exists. I don't want something like this to slip through the cracks and then all of a sudden it like sneaks up on me because my book club is chomping at the bit to have that second volume. And so every time I'm just like, is it here? How about now? What about now? Is it here? No. Yes? And it's going to fall off my
radar.
They
know there's other books out there, right?
Well, yeah, we're reading all of them in the meantime.
We will read all of them before this one comes out.
We will read every single one. Yes.
Yeah.
We just read Berserk, actually, and there's a beautiful hardcover edition that came out this week.
We'll talk more about that later.
Yes, we will.
So the Fave d'Or is an award handed out at the Anglo-M Festival, and Rumiko Takahashi winning the Grand Prix. And I think not for a single work, but for just a body of work.
It's like a lifetime achievement.
Yeah, something like that. My favorite thing is Monsters. If you haven't checked it out, check it out. Moving on, in other news, in not so fantastic news, I guess, Marvel got the license to Conan back, which we talked about on the live show. Conan's joining a team.
The Savage Avengers, or as we like to call them, Marvel's Murder Buddies.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you, Patrick. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, they've already launched two new Conan titles, and the third one's on the way.
I haven't been paying very close attention. Are they just reusing their original titles, Savage Sword and Conan the Barbarian, and what's the third one?
It's like Age of Conan.
The Queen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I read the first issue. I was going to review it, first issue of Conan the Barbarian. So much time has gone by for me to do it. Because really, I was going to say, basically, it's fine. But, you know, I'm not a Conan fan, but I love the Dark Horse comic. Mm-hmm. And the reason I love the Dark Horse comic is that it paid such close attention to the fact that this character comes from pulp and weird fiction roots. And one of the most wonderful stylistic things they did with, it was Kurt Busiek and Kerry Nord did the Dark Horse comic, is that the narration text is done in font that looks like an old Underwood typewriter, complete with grubby, the O's are black because it's from an old crummy typewriter that someone writes on or that Robert E. Howard wrote on and got paid a penny a word or something. And that whole vibe off that comic for the first 2 years kept me enthralled because there was this distancing effect on the violence and the misogyny and I loved it. And then as soon as they lost that particular touch, I was done. Mm-hmm. I was bored. I quit.
Conan's kind of a one-trick pony, usually, for me.
But Conan's got tons of fans, and I'm sure there are tons of people that are going to read Marvel's Murder Buddies and love it to death.
Oh, yeah.
Gary Duggan, how do you pronounce that?
I always thought it was Gary.
Gary Duggan.
I thought it was Jerry.
So Mr. Duggan jokes that Savage Avengers might as well be called the Stabby Avengers, because without checking, this has the most stabbing out of any Avengers book, between Wolverine's claws, Venom's teeth, Elektra's sigh, and Conan's swords.
And I made that. I had not read that, but I made that joke at the live show.
You did, absolutely.
And I was like, okay, we have to have Wolverine in this group because clearly it's not stabby enough. And yeah. lo and behold, the author even recognizes that. Yeah. I am just outside of space and time, I tell you.
It's a funny just kind of, because that's an old joke, because when they did X-Force like 8 to 10 years ago, they made it with all the stabby X-Men. Because like Warpath was on it, and Wolverine, and I don't know, the five other people with claws. It was Claw Team 5. And it was just sort of like, okay, yay.
Well, you know, because the team before that was all the shooty characters. You
yes.
know? Yeah. Because you can be a mutant and have shooty things too, because that's, I don't know. A mutation?
Sure. I can hold my gun really well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Last year, I think it was last year when this started, DC created a line of comics exclusive to Walmart, some 100-page comics. Mm-hmm. I think that's what they were. Mm-hmm. And, well, that's coming to an end. Courtesy of Ryan Higgins, owner of the California-based comic book store Comics Conspiracy, he says that he has word that the Walmart line will be reprinted as graphic novels, which are set to hit comic shops later this year, and so the 100-page as 100-page specials. So did this affect you guys at all?
Nope.
Not at all?
Yeah, we mentioned off camera before, off mic, that it's just, there was another retailer that talked about this, but there's a certain kind of privilege amongst comic retailers that pops up at the times, and it's just sort of like, oh no, how dare somebody else have access to comics? Just like, I don't care that much.
No.
And sooner or later, it was going to be reprinted in a trade.
Right.
So it was like, whatever.
It impacted me because I bought some of them, but since I refused to step foot in a Walmart, I bought them online, which compounded the price. And I was kind of taken aback that I thought there was going to be some new material, but I think I bought the Swamp Thing one, and I bought the Halloween.
Well, the Halloween
one was...
You bought
one that you just bought in a comic store. It wasn't a Walmart one. Yeah. We did a whole book report on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It was
I'm glad
Cavalcade.
You remember, I don't.
Cavalcade or
it was
whatever.
The Comicade, yeah.
That was in comic stores, but the other one was both reprint material and I think like one or two new stories or something
well,
like
that. At least
the
one.
Swamp
Thing
King
one
or something
was all
like
reprint material save, I think, one story,
yeah.
Which I was actually disappointed about that. I bought them both off eBay, so I didn't know which ones came out from a different retail source and which ones didn't. So.
Right.
You had to guide me on that one. So
it's a team effort.
Hey, yeah.
Yeah, all in.
Go Team Cole.
All for one.
See, I don't think this is a huge win or loss. I mean, it just... Man, I don't know. At least we don't have to. At least we don't have to listen to people complain about it for a while now.
Right, we'll find
until
other
the
things.
Yeah, until
we'll
the next thing comes
things.
Up.
Yeah.
All right. Keeping on the DC track, Vertigo series from Mark Russell and Richard Pace called Second Coming has been dumped by DC Vertigo, just ahead of the first issue's release date. It's a biblical satire in which God sends Jesus back to Earth to learn how to be a better savior from Sun Man, the world's greatest superhero, and was one of the first books announced as part of the relaunch of Vertigo. And apparently this got some people in a tizzy, thanks to the Fox News and conservative media machine.
Yeah.
Which is so weird, because it was like a whole Christian thing of like a Christian outrage or something like that about it that I heard. And I know a devout Christian, and he was like, I was really looking forward to that. Because he actually got what it was.
Right.
He wasn't
right.
just being upset because somebody on Fox told him to be upset, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's what's really, really sad about the whole these kinds of issues. It's like, well, let's stop and consider what the story has to offer. It's entirely likely it's not going to be satirizing or criticizing your faith. Stop to consider that it might actually be seeking what is beneficial in these things.
Well, see, all of that is really lovely and sound, but that was that was way more depth than anyone probably who was outraged about this would give it.
Yeah.
Because if they just looked at it, they would see what the content was.
Sure.
And then they could really decide, you know.
On the other hand, I'm kind of surprised they even considered doing it because, there was a certain story about Swamp Thing going back to the Garden of Gethsemane and helping Christ during the Last Temptation, mm-hmm. that kind of never made it through print. In fact, it was never even completed. They kiboshed it so quickly.
Yeah.
And it pretty much ended the career of Rick Veitch in mainstream comics. He went on to do his own work again. But if you dig for it, The Last Temptation of Swamp Thing, you can find pencils out there of it, and it's become one of these mythic things, like, you know, will we ever see that story completed?
Oh, no, we won't anytime soon.
No.
So finish?
No, you finish.
Okay.
You go.
Somebody start.
So the thing is that we've already talked about the change in who's running DC right now, mm-hmm. and it's an ex-Marvel CEO or ex-Disney CEO.
Right.
But the other thing, too, is that they're still scrambling from the AT&T merger that started all the way in June of last year. Those things take a while.
Right.
So it's apparently kind of chaos over there, and they have a new boss that's basically like, we're not going to rock any boats.
Yeah.
So Vertigo and the Black Label were pretty much DOA because it's just that wrong timing.
Gotcha.
I just saw a new reprint under the Black Label for Frank Miller's Ronin.
Yeah. I mean, they'll use it for that. They're going to repurpose the name and it's just for fancy reprints.
And they're also doing DC Essentials, which are just reprints of material that they think are essential.
Right, yeah.
Like Snyder's Batman.
First Flash Run
like
or something.
Like some Green Lantern. It's just like weird. I keep looking at it and being like, oh, you're just a weird reprint.
Yeah.
So it's like we're just going to get a lot of that until they're like, just a moment, please. Stay tuned. Technical difficulties.
It might take a year or so. But the good news is that Mark Russell, he got the rights, so he's just going to take it somewhere else.
Yeah, he'll be fine.
So Second Coming will rise again.
Yes.
Third Coming.
You were just waiting for that.
Waiting for that.
You've been holding on to that one for
Russell
a week,
and Pace got the rights back from DC Vertigo, so they don't know where it's going to land yet, but it will be published eventually, and then Fox can have another news story about it.
I'll bet you IDW.
IDW. Okay, you heard it here first.
I'm going to put money on Dynamite, because that's where the boys went.
Yeah, that's a good call.
All right.
And I'll say Dark Horse, because I don't know.
Oh, you rebellious person, you.
I'll actually say DC Vertigo, bring it back.
Okay.
And it lands back at
digital.
DC Vertigo.
Digital first.
Digital only. Digital
first. Exclusive.
All right. And finally, keeping with DC, DC has announced the plot of Deceased, a clever, clever title. It's basically a zombie Elseworld story.
Yeah.
It is by a writer that I enjoy.
It caught my attention because Stefano Gaudiano is part of the creative team. His name is misspelled in this Multiversity Comics article.
Oh.
But, So friend of the show and guest at the Panel Jumper Live will be, I'm presuming, inking Deceased.
Or Stefano says he's tracing it.
Tracing. I want to be respectful of other tracers.
Okay.
Anyway, Deceased number one. I mean, whatever you think of zombie stories and Elseworld stories. I mean,
is this a standalone thing or is it a...
Yeah, it's a six-issue standalone.
Okay. All right. I couldn't tell if it was an event, a Deceased event
Darkseid puts out some sort of
zombie virus
that you get from looking at screens.
It's like 28 days later, kind of.
Yeah, but I can't remember who in the article said this, but they were teasing like, the stakes are real. We can't tell. Oh, Tom Taylor. We can tell a story without holding back. No one you love is safe. Even the icons can. So do they kill Batman or something in this?
I think he's infected at the beginning or something.
Yeah.
So.
And there's a big eye roll because it is spelled...
East. Yeah.
What's the Omega thing that Darkseid can do with
the Omega beams?
Yeah. But it was
those
like,
guys. Yeah.
It was. I thought there was like some. There was some equation. There was the
anti-life equation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That thing. Okay. I'm mixing up two different things.
But they're the same guy. So,
yeah.
You know.
Okay. So I'm wondering if it's like
same guy thing.
I beams. Any life. Can we move on now, please?
Yeah, let's move on to Book Report, everybody. Chris Cassell, let's start with you.
I will talk about the new Wonder Twins comic as part of DC's imprint Wonder Comics, brought to you by Brian Michael Bendis. This is written by Mark Russell, who we just spoke of, and with art by Stephen Byrne. And it was fun. It wasn't like anything too super special, but it had the right tone. Mm-hmm. The art really worked.
Is there a Gleek?
Not yet, but I think he's going to pop up in the next issue or two. There's just little things like within the second page, there's a picture of Flash at a gym with like a salad plate, and he just says, "Everyone loves a hummus platter."
Oh,
and it's just like, okay, that's great.
Is that random or is it?
It kind of random. Okay. But and then there's like a part where Superman's telling Batman and Wonder Woman like what their powers are, the Wonder Twins. And Wonder Woman's like, "That's underwhelming. I am underwhelmed." There's just quick little easy jokes that are fun, and it doesn't take itself too seriously. And it's all about them in school, start trying to make friends. Zan doesn't understand like what it means to be cool. He thinks he's just going to have a pet crocodile, and everybody will think he's neat. And he has like a new catchphrase called "total refreshment," stuff like that. and Mr. Mitzelpidelic shows up to cause problems. So it's just cute. I can't remember. Did the Super Friends cartoon, did they have a computer that had like a personality? Because they have a computer here.
I don't remember.
That's
don't
like lonely, so. And it's just like, we're friends
I
now.
I remember a big screen in the Halls of Justice, yeah. But I don't think it looked like that.
Okay. Yeah. There's a big screen that basically has a digital smiley face, and it's just like, wow, somebody's actually talking to me. Would you like to hear some Philip Glass?
Oh, God.
And so,
no.
Yeah, so it's just, it's silly. It's not taking itself too seriously, but it has some neat little character moments, so... It was fun.
So can you clarify for those who don't know, what is the Wonder Comics imprint? That this is something that Bendis established when he went over to DC.
So
right?
It's basically them doing teenage superheroes.
Okay.
So Young Justice is relaunched, and it's bringing back the original characters.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also have Naomi, which is following a young black girl who, I think she's in Portland.
Yes.
And it gets destroyed by a Superman fight with Mongol. And so like she starts investigating Superman and stuff like that. And I feel like there's a fourth one that I can't remember right now that hasn't come out yet.
So it's a teen targeted imprint, but it's still
H for Hero.
Dial H for Hero. Thank you
for getting that one too.
Yeah. So I mean it's teen plus targeted. It's like teen characters, but it still feels like the targets are 30-year-olds and up.
Okay.
But yeah,
those are kids as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
But I could safely give this to a younger reader. The only part is like they reveal there's something, they have great thunderstorms on their home planet, and they causes everybody to experience intense lust. So they call it the Thunderlust, where you just have to make out with somebody immediately if there's thunder.
Thunder!
Yeah, exactly that. And so that's where he gets his new nickname. He's like Thunderlust from now on because he happened to be in the wrong track meeting at the wrong time.
So,
it's fun. It's worth checking out. It's even got like a neat little logo.
Cool. So. Wonder Twins. Thank you, Chris. Nicole, what do you got for us?
So I jump back on the Detective Comics train because Peter Tomasi.
That's a good train.
Yes, I had to. So I had read Rebirth a long time ago when James Tinney and the Fourth was on it. Jumped off at the end of that because the band broke up, and I don't like that. And so jumped back on with Peter Tomasi because I love him. I love him so much. He's doing the story in words. The pencils by Doug Mankey.
Or Monkey?
Monkey?
I'm not sure. Maybe I'm just imposing what
I like.
What
Monkey.
I like.
Monkey. Yes, that's good. Inker is Jamie Mendoza and colorist is David Barron. And maybe I will tag a little bit with you on this, Chris, because so the premise is that Batman and Gordon find two murder victims who are dressed up and look exactly like his parents. And someone is messing with Batman, using everything that led him up to becoming Batman. Every person, every moment, this thing, this entity is like trying to utilize. And as Batman goes and meets with different people and different things happen, people in his life get injured, maimed, die.
People that he attributes to forming Batman.
Forming, yes, exactly. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, no, yeah, you go ahead.
Well, so overall, I've been enjoying it, but I find that it's difficult for me because I don't know a lot of the Rogues Gallery. So
they don't explain mm-hmm. certain people that well.
Yeah.
Or at least it's slowly revealing. So like the last issue, they bring back the man who taught him to be an escape artist alongside Mr. Miracle. And so it's just like, oh, I only vaguely remember that dude. And so they, like in the next issue, they kind of like explain that a little better, but just a little, because they're just moving fast. That's the trick.
Yeah.
They did the issue where he hunted down the guy that Liam Neeson played in the first Batman movie before they revealed it was Ra's al Ghul. Ducard.
That sounds right.
And Ducard,
that person I wasn't familiar with.
Yeah, Ducard's kind of an obscure old flashback story.
Okay.
So it's like, oh, okay, we're doing that. You know,
yeah.
So it felt like there needed to be annotations. It would have made it a little bit better.
It would have made it a little bit better. I mean, I'm totally fine, especially with my superheroes, to just roll with it.
Yeah.
And get the general gist of, like, someone's messing with Batman and they're using whoever that guy is right now.
Yeah.
So overall, I'm really curious to see where it goes from here. We'll be having issue number 1,000 soon. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if that's going to have anything to do with this or if it's going to be special or not. I didn't really look into it.
I think it will. I think it'll be the end cap.
Yeah.
And they're going to be bringing in, we talked about in the previous podcast, the Arkham Knight from the video games, which I only just figured out when they did the Arkham Knight comic book adaptations, Peter Tomasi wrote those.
Nice.
So this is him being like, I'm going to do my guy.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, overall it's good. I'm not like Superman bowled over right now,
yeah.
But it's good. It's better than bad. It's good.
Oh, nice. it's better than what is it? Log.
It's log. Yeah, it's log. Yeah.
It's heavy.
It.
It's wood.
That's all I got. Nice. So yeah.
With some bonus Ren and Stimpy. Thank you, Nicole. So that's Detective Comics number 9.
All of them.
All of them.
All of them.
All of them.
We're at 9, from 994 to 9. Where did I leave off? 9.
998.
Because I haven't read 999.
Yeah. 999 just came out this week.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay, thank you, Nicole.
Uh-huh.
And finally, Cole Hornaday, what do you got for us?
Well, I'm going to go off the rails a little bit. I don't have a comic book. I wanted to review the original TV pilot of Will Eisner's The Spirit. This was a made-for-TV movie back in 1987 that I think that the network, I don't remember what network it was supposed to be on, as recently, you want to look at it, Chris? Well, no, yeah. I mean, the print's really tiny and I don't want you to hurt yourself.
That's okay.
I think the story behind it is that the network didn't want to air it, but there was enough of a fan outcry that they actually wanted to see it, and it was aired once. This just showed up on Warner Archive and the Warner Archive Collection. I think it was put out about 6 or 7 years ago, maybe more recently than that. And I've always been curious about it, but sidebar, I have never seen the Frank Miller Spirit movie. I have no interest in seeing it, but I've also never been a super fan of the original comic book. I mean, we all know and can appreciate the contribution that Will Eisner made to the industry, but I read probably the first 12 or so issues of, I got my hands on these archives back in the 90s, and I read them all, and the artwork was beautiful, but I was so put off by the cultural racism and the misogyny that were inherent in the stories that I couldn't keep saying it's a product of its time. I couldn't do it anymore and I lost interest. So going back to the 87 TV pilot, I really love this. I watched it twice. It has an internal charm that we have lost. We have absolutely lost, except for maybe the Lego movies. When we tell these kinds of stories, it's campy the way, of course, you know, because there was up to a certain point in time, we only knew how to tell, or at least film producers, TV producers only knew how to tell superhero stories with a skosh of camp, because that's what the Adam West, Burt Ward Batman TV series taught us. This has a TV budget. It stars Sam Jones, who is, of course, Flash Gordon in the Dino De Laurentiis film, a film that, you know, bombed pretty badly but rose to be like this cult artifact. It is stunning to look at. And he's weird and charming in this the way he's weird and charming in Flash Gordon. In fact, I think his performance in this is better because I think he gets what's happening. And the other really charming performance is Nana Visitor, who was eventually Major Kira on Deep Space Nine. She gets it too. It's quirky, it's silly, it's shy, and it's actually kind of nimble in places that you would kind of be surprised by. I think it's worth taking a look at. It's not perfect. It's, you know, super low budget, and it has that sort of saturated color aspect of, you know, again, what producers back in the day thought that comic books should look like on screen, that got totally blown out of proportion when we get to the Warren Beatty Dick Tracy movie in the 90s. It basically tells the origin story of Denny Colt. He's coming from, and I don't know this part, but he comes from, his best friend gets murdered, and he tracks the murderer back to Central City from his where he works as a police officer in East Amphet, Oregon. And of course, the joke in the TV show is that you're from East Armpit? God, that got old so quickly. The only downside of the whole thing is that there was a black character in the original comic book called Ebony, who was a streetwise, I think, shoeshine, child of the streets, you know, streetwise, who was always helping Denny Colt, the spirit, solve his crimes. So they changed Ebony's name in the TV show, and they called him Newbie, but we meet him and he's still a streetwise thief character. He's selling Walkman tape decks that he's stolen from a truck. And I'm like, yeah, that's great. We sort of like update him, but we still have this black character who's, you know, a criminal and cannot be depicted in any other way. So aside from that, I actually enjoyed it. I did watch it twice. I didn't roll my eyes. I didn't cluck at it disgustingly. I actually was taken in by its charm. So if you can get your hands on the spirit, the original TV pilot, I think you might actually enjoy it.
Remind me how you got your hands on that.
Well, our good friend Tom Stewart posted a trailer, because he never seems to be absent from social media at any time.
And I think he has a day job too.
He does have, he has a day job that keeps him really freaking busy, which just stuns me. And he does a play like every 2 weeks. He's in a different play. So Tom, I'm sorry, I don't mean to diss on you, but. Actually, I do.
It's all in love, Tom.
He had posted an article about it a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, you know, I'd heard rumors about this. I remember seeing bootlegs at the bootleg tables at every comic book show.
It says archive collection on it, so you just get it from the WB website or something like that?
Yeah, yeah. This is a legit thing put out by Warner Brothers, but for years, you know, you got your fuzzy-looking bootleg on VHS tapes, like, you know, the original Fantastic Four movie and stuff like that.
Cool. All right. The Spirit.
The Spirit.
Thank you, Cole. Well, that's Book Report, or in this case, DVD Report. And that is our show. Coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound Podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at Comics Dungeon. Subscribe to the show at iTunes, or however you get your podcasts, at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And now, friends, I'm laughing because Webster's always helped me to give this right to one of the cameras when we're filming, so I'm trying to do that. Now, friends, get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time. This week, our questions come to us from Mr. Chris Casso. Lay it on us, Chris.
Okay, this one is about police partners. And this first question, only one of you has a slight chance of answering, because I know you just started watching this, but this is what made me create this entire list.
Thanks for the trust.
Yeah, you're welcome. This lazy, bumbling head of the Gravity Falls Police Department and his dim-witted, incompetent deputy barely managed to do their jobs in the show, but they are truly supportive of each other in all of their endeavors, including sleepovers and going on vacation together. They are not adverse to hugging, and they also exchange friendship bracelets. Who are they? that.
I can't remember their names.
Sheriff Daryl Blubbs and Deputy Edwin Derlin. Occasionally...
Blubbs and Derlin.
The show hints that their relationship is romantic, and it was confirmed and by the last episode. Definitely was.
Now, mind you, I've only gotten through about 5 episodes, so I don't even know if I've gotten to those guys yet.
They're great because there's one sequence really quick here where one of them's trying to figure out like a puzzle to get to like a treasure chest, and he fails it, and the other one just says like, "Well, the greatest treasure is spending my time with you."
Aww.
And it's just like, I love these guys so much.
Okay, I would remember that. Now I'm inspired to go back and make sure I watch
it's
more
the one
of
with
show.
The pterodactyl.
Okay, so I have not seen that one.
Next question. Cool. Pterodactyl. Axie Smartest is a gruff, tough man dedicated to killing bad guys. Married to his job, he works the always shift by sleeping for only 2 minutes. At night, you know what this is. At night, he wears a black suit and kills bad guys in their sleep. While technically not his first or official police partner, this ally of his has Gatling guns for arms, breathes fire, and can fly, and is also a T-Rex. Who are they?
Axe Cop. And I don't know what his name is, though. Little Gatling.
The T-Rex is Wexter.
Wexter.
Flute Cop was the first original partner. Next question. Originally launching in April 2000 and merging the genres of superhero fantasy, crime noir, and police procedural, this series follows the lives of 2 homicide detectives, Christian Walker and Dina Pilgrim. Pilgrim, once rated as the 24th best comic book character by Empire Magazine, is a new transfer to the Chicago division dealing with superpowered homicides. She's partnered with the square-jawed and highly experienced Detective Walker, who's hiding many a dark secret. What comic series is this and who created it?
Powers by Brian Michael Bendis.
And
Michael Avon Ohman.
Oh, thank you.
Cool.
Teamwork. Yeah.
There you go.
Teamwork.
Sharing their father's red hair and the family tradition of working for the Opal Police Department, you know this one. This family of cops often stood side by side the heroes of Opal in fighting the various threats to the city. There was Matt, a reincarnation of an old West lawman, Barry, the prodigal child, Clarence, the patriarch and Opal's commissioner, the quiet and stoic Mason, and the brave Hope, a woman beloved by sometimes villain, sometimes hero, the Shade. Do you remember their name or the series that they came from?
I can tell you the series, but I was saying I hate you because I cannot remember all their names, and I used to know all their names. Yeah, it's from Starman. It's from James Robinson's Starman series from the 90s. But no, I cannot name the family.
It's the O'Dare family.
The O'Dare family, yeah.
Okay.
He was so good at all those supporting characters.
He really was.
Yes. Yeah, I love that book so much.
Last question. Hotshot officer Nicholas Angel gets saddled with a bumbling action movie obsessed partner as they uncover the nasty secrets lurking behind England's coziest crime-free village. What is the movie?
Hot Fuzz. Yes. I just watched that like 2 days ago.
Hey, nice. And that is Partners.
Yay.
Nice. Good job.
Thank you, Chris. And thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.